are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, June the 20th, and it's draft day, and the Pistons made a trade. This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in Detroit City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, Pistons fan, follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the word about the podcast. We made it. We made it through draft season. We made it to trade season for the Pistons, too, as the Woj bomb drops on late Wednesday night. So today we're going to talk about that. The Tony Snell trade, and I'll tell you why it's a good one for the Pistons, as you probably already know. We're also going to talk to Kyle Tucker of The Athletic and Locked On Wildcats. Talk to us about the Kentucky prospects who could play, who could be in play for the Pistons at 15 or possibly even 30 if you're optimistic about those guys falling a little bit. And I'm also going to release my top 30 big board because apparently now we need a top 30 big board as the Pistons pick 15, 30, and 45. We'll run through it very quickly as we got a lot to get to today. But to give me a follow on Twitter at Matt underscore Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore to that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons dash Matt Shook. A reminder that the first round grades will all be up online at DetNews.com shortly after the first round. That's what I'm working on tonight during the draft. I'll be up at the Pistons headquarters at Auburn Hills. So I don't know if that's a fan event or not. I should look that up. But I will be up at the Palace of Auburn Hills. If you're there, send me a message and we can come say hi. I'll come out of the press room and say what's up to anyone there. So with the Locked On NBA mock draft, you need to bone up on this. You need to study up for tonight at 7:30. And you should listen to the Locked On NBA mock draft. The local experts are in all the draft rooms. Jeremy Wu of SI.com is giving the player breakdowns of our mock draft. And Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball has the fantasy breakdown. We can see who Milwaukee was picking at 30 before this change, and that would be interesting to me to see that. And I just looked it up, and it's actually Milwaukee at number 30 taking Ty Jerome of Virginia. So obviously a guy there coming from a good program, good pedigree, not probably a guy the Pistons are going to be looking at because that's kind of the top-off guy on a good team. The Pistons need to take more of an upside swing, so I suspect that they will do that. But that's who Milwaukee had when they were drafting for Milwaukee at that time. But that's the type of player the Pistons might be looking at. The Pistons made a deal. Woj with the bomb right as I was walking out of the Bob Seger concert on Wednesday night tonight. Taping this, staying up late for you guys so I can get this up first thing in the morning for yous. But that's right. I saw Jason Isbell and Bob Seger in the same week in concerts here in Detroit. So a good week for your boy. And the draft is today. My God, just a great week for a hoops and music junkie like myself. I guess I can't call myself a music junkie. I like a few artists a lot. And Bob Seger and Jason Isbell happen to be a couple of them. And, of course, Springsteen being the biggest one. No disrespect to the boss, in case he's listening, which I'm sure he is. But the trade, just like the Mike Conley deal earlier in the day between Memphis and Utah, I feel like it's a good one for both teams, the Pistons and Milwaukee. And that can happen in the NBA where there's such different motivations for teams. Everyone in football, the NFL trades, everyone pretty much needs the same things. So, you know, you can make, you can trade a pick for a player, but how that player pans out and what you get with that pick is going to be kind of easy to tell who won and lost that trade. And then baseball, it's the same way where most trades are basically young prospects for older guys. So down the line, you can project who won those trades based on the results of that for both of those sports pretty easily. And certainly there are winners and losers in NBA trades based on results sometimes. But in basketball, more times than not, and a lot of times, sometimes both teams make out pretty good in trades. They both are trying to accomplish things with deals, and they can accomplish a lot of those same things. So just because it's what I believe a very good deal for Detroit and what I'm seeing from a lot of you guys on Twitter as well, loving the deal and also keeping a perspective that it's a fairly minor one for a team that might, you know, that needs big improvements if it wants to be any kind of contending team. And, you know, wants big down-the-line gambles that pay off if they want to be a contending team, you know, in the short midterm future of 2, 3, 4 years from now as well. But that doesn't mean that Detroit fleeced Milwaukee in this deal. It just means that, you know, maybe both teams have paid out pretty well. The deal is simply the Pistons giving up John Luehr and receiving Tony Snell and the 30th overall pick in tonight's draft, the last pick of the first round. First, about Snell, just so you know, he's turning into a bit of a journeyman now, but he's a 39% shooter from three throughout the last 5 years of his career. That's not including his rookie season. He shot 32%. I just wanted to drag up his numbers a little bit and include just years two through six, where he's been a combined 39%. So it's not like, you know, the 39% he shot last year was a fluke. He was in the 40s a couple years before that. Now, when we're talking about three-point shooting numbers that have to do with players who are on the Milwaukee Bucks, we have to remember that part of the reason that those guys are getting three-point shots are because they're playing with Giannis Antetokounmpo. So the fact that Tony Snell was a 40.6, 40.3, and 39.7 in his 3 years with the Milwaukee Bucks, you have to keep in mind who he's playing with. So there's a little bit of inflation with some of those numbers, the sad reality there. But a decent defensive player as well. The requisite side on the wings is what the Pistons are looking for there. 6'7", good length, 27 years old as well. He was a starter for a couple seasons in Milwaukee up until this year before they upgraded. And for a team with a good wing situation, he'd be a bench player, a good bench player. But for the Pistons, he might be a starter. But that's where we're at right now, and that's okay for now. That's progress. The problem, the downside for Tony Snell is the contract. He's overpaid, and you owe him for the next year as well, with the assumption being that he picks up the $12 million player option next summer for the following year, 2021. So the Pistons traded John Luehr, whose contract actually went down in value over the life of it, which made it down to $9.5 million this season, a pretty unusual wrinkle as part of John Luehr's contract. If you're Milwaukee, you get out of Snell's option season. And not only that, which is valuable in and of itself, but you cut not only the $2.8 million in salary difference that you saved going from Tony Snell to John Luehr. We're going to call him Smell from now on then, some tongue-tiedness. But you can backload now, you know, some of the deals that you might want to give to Robin Lopez or matching Malcolm Brogdon or Chris Middleton. I know Middleton will probably be a max, so you can't really do anything with that contract. But, you know, assuming you want to keep those guys, which you do, you can kind of do some more creative maneuvering knowing the next summer you'll have some additional cap space to play with. Plus, for the Bucks' sake, a first-round pick is a guaranteed contract. So if you're adding a player at number 30, which they don't want to do, you have to add him to your cap sheet, which hurts in your pursuits of Brook Lopez and Malcolm Brogdon and Chris Middleton. And you don't have to – I mean, if you get a guy at 30 and you're the Milwaukee Bucks, you don't have minutes to play that guy anyways. You don't have time for reclamation or for you know, projects to take on and to be paying some guy $2 million to go ahead and play on your G League team all season. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. Better to spend that money elsewhere. You know, in some ways, you'd almost rather not have that 30th pick if you're the Bucks, but certainly it doesn't hurt that much for them to give it away. That is certainly not the case for the Pistons, who now have three picks in the draft, 15, 30, and 45. And I'll say this as we've been going through the end of the first round a little bit lately. I kind of like the end of the first round. There were some guys, and we talked about them yesterday, Fiondé Cabangele of Florida State, Bruno Fernando of Maryland, Jalen LeKay, the high school kid, Darius Baisley, the other high school kid who interned for New Balance. That stockbroker Bruce is throwing out that name online. So, and he's kind of a credible Pistons source. Obviously, he knows somebody who has something to do with the Pistons front office. And so some good names in that range. Maybe now we could talk more about a Cam Johnson type if you go upside non-wing at 15, which is kind of another possibility at 30, is that since you have 30, it opens up that possibility that you could go non-wing at 15 because, you know, I thought you needed to come out of this draft with some potential on the wing, and you probably can't really get that 45 in any kind of meaningful way. But and if you didn't have 30, your hand would be been kind of forced to walk away with one of those wings at 15. Now, if you know that like a KZ Okpala of Stanford or whoever, by the way, Mark Spears of ESPN is reporting that Okpala's getting some love and maybe moving up the draft boards. But, you know, an Okpala or maybe Cam Johnson of North Carolina or Matisse Thybulle of Washington, if one of those guys might be sitting there at 30, that kind of changes your calculus about 15. You might be more willing to go get a P.J. Washington or a Jackson Hayes or a Gogo Patadze or maybe even Bol Bol at 15. Or, of course, there's always the possibility you could package two of these picks you have, possibly move up into that, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 range, which you know that I would like to see them do and get a Brandon Clark or a Sekou Doumbouya there. So, but all in all, more flexibility for the Pistons, more chances to get positive young assets, a good move. But let's talk a little bit about the bad news, the cap space. And I don't mind it as much as a lot of you guys do, but the next season parade of Reggie Jackson and John Lure and Langston Galloway as expiring deals coming off the books, and we talk about those three contracts so much on this show, it's almost like they're a team. I know you guys were a little bit excited about that cap money coming off next year, that expiring money, and you could go get a lower tier star or something like that. But to me, that's not the way it works in Detroit. To me, cap space does not always mean free agents, especially with the Pistons. It gives you the ability to make these kinds of moves. You take on some money in trades. It's the reason the Pistons ended up with the brilliant Marcus Morris deal with Phoenix. They had the space to take on that contract. Signing free agents and settling for whatever's out there and paying above market, value for players to come to Detroit with your cap space, that's how you end up with Charlie V and Ben Gordon. Nobody is worth it is coming here except for some of those bargain bin guys that have to settle for you as a team and then juice you for all your cap space that you have. And really, let's say they did have cap space next season. Signing Tony Snell for a one-year deal would be a pretty good use of it. Obviously, you wouldn't want to give him $12 million, but that's the Lure tax, and that's the price you have to pay for John Lure being on your cap sheet for all these years. But we're going to switch gears up next and talk to Kyle Tucker of The Athletic. He covers the Kentucky Wildcats for them. We're going to talk about the UK prospects at 15 for the Pistons. That's up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
All right, and now we're being joined by Kyle Tucker, covers Kentucky for The Athletic, also does the Locked On Kentucky podcast. You can find him on Twitter at KyleTucker_ATH. Kyle, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I recommend following Kyle on Twitter, especially if you're an NBA fan, because you always need to know what's going on with John Calipari's group come NBA draft season. But Kyle, kind of from a broad perspective about this team in particular this year, you've seen so many, lottery picks and all the NBA superstars kind of come through there in Kentucky the last several years. This past season's team, the overall talent level, did it have kind of a wow factor to it? Did they jump out as much as some of the teams in the past, or how did it kind of compare to some of the other teams you've seen?
Well, I think the thing that's kind of jumped out over the last 3 or 4 years, the thing that people have gotten a little antsy about, is they've continued to get great talent, but they have not got that transcendent guy, the Anthony Davis, the Karl Towns, John Wall. They haven't gotten that elite guy lately, and Duke has gotten a lot of those guys. But they do continue to get really good overall talent. So you weren't wowed by any one guy necessarily all the time, but I think over the course of the season, you're certainly impressed by the totality of their talent. They had three guys that are going to get drafted in the first probably 20 picks, and then Reed Travis, who looks like won't get drafted, but was a terrific college player. So, but that's the one thing that stands out. There hasn't been a guy that's just going to, be this national superstar in the last 3 or 4 years.
And because of that, all three basically on the radar for the Detroit Pistons at number 15. And usually, yeah, like you said, those elite talents that wouldn't fall that far. But since we're talking about number 15 here, let's start with Keldon Johnson, who was mocked by the Athletic in the mock draft going to the Pistons at 15 yesterday. Sounds like a defensive specialist who could kind of maybe help out right away. Do you think he's the most NBA ready as a contributor right now out of the three guys?
I think that's probably PJ Washington, who may also be there. We can talk more about him. But I think he's maybe the most – I think Keldon might be the most interesting of the three guys between PJ Washington, Tyler Hero, and himself. Just because I think as he matures a little bit, he could be a guy who really takes off. He was not as consistent a defender as I expected he would be coming in, as I think they expected him to be here. If there was any one thing that could have taken his game to another level, it would have been to be that lockdown guy all the time, the kind of the reputation he came to Kentucky with. I watched him in the McDonald's All-America game. I think it was McDonald's, or it may have been the Jordan Brand, one of the big All-Star games right before he got to Kentucky. He had kind of a chip on his shoulder, and R.J. Barrett was in that game. And towards the end of that game, he was asking to defend him. I know it was an all-star game, but it was a close game. They were playing for last shots there at the end. And Keldon Johnson wanted R.J. Barrett, and he shut him down, I think, two or three times in a row. And so he came in with that sort of reputation, and we didn't see it all the time at Kentucky. He was maybe a little too concerned about his offense early on, especially. But he is a guy, I think, that can get it done. He's long. He's athletic. He's very tough-minded. I wrote a story on him. Guys on the team said he was basically crazy, and they meant it as a compliment that he's kind of, he was a guy that once he got it cranked up, he was super, super intense. And I think it's just a matter of getting a little more maturity to hold on to that, 40 minutes a game or the 32 minutes that you're on the floor, and then game in and game out. But there's a lot to like about him, and he shoots it, I think, plenty well enough for a guy at his position. He had times where he really got hot from three and looked like a legitimate three-point threat as well.
And now kind of moving on to P.J. Washington, the biggest of the trio guys, kind of a smaller big as opposed to a bigger wing in terms of NBA terms. But he came in a couple years ago probably thinking that he was going to be another Kentucky one and done, but ended up coming back for his sophomore season. What did he kind of develop in stride and kind of add to his game in year two?
Well, he's a guy that is basically the embodiment of what I just talked about with Keldon Johnson. He had to find a way to keep it cranked up all the time, day in and day out. And he came back as a sophomore with a super professional mentality. Like he approached everything like a pro because he wanted to be a pro. He was projected in the 50s if he'd come out last year, and now he's could sneak into the lottery. He dramatically improved his three-point shooting shot. I think almost ended up shooting almost 40% from three, or may have shot better than 40%. I can't even remember now. But he had, had a game where he made five threes in a game. He's, I think, the hope for him at the NBA level, if you're drafting him, is that he's kind of Draymond light. That's what he wants to be, a Draymond Green type of player. He can be an impact defender. He can be somebody you have to respect from three. He can put the ball on the floor, handle it, pass it. He is an excellent passer. They really played through him a lot when games were on the line. They would throw it to him on the block, and he would make that move into the post and make the jump hook, or they would throw it to him in the high post and let him face up quickly and sort of decide, drive and attack and get it to teammates or make the finish the play. You could use him as your small ball five, and if you want to try to play like Golden State. I mean, I think that's the hope for him as a pro. And I think it's he's not Draymond Green, but I think it's a reasonable, what you hope he could be like at the next level.
Yeah, kind of a reasonable archetype, but not quite a comparison, I guess, so to speak. But yeah. Tyler Hero, the third guy on the list of Kentucky prospects that could very reasonably go to the Pistons at number 15. Obviously, the top line of his report is that he's a potential outstanding shooter at this level. But what do you think about the rest of his game?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that he really made it a mission. He talked about, I don't want to be just a white guy who can shoot it, the stereotype. And at times, he really did sort of try to bust that stereotype. He put the ball on the floor. He scored from all three levels. He could drive it. He had a pretty nice floater game, the mid-range pull-up. He is not going to be a lockdown defender, but he's got good instincts and good timing. He's great at jumping into passing lanes and getting the pick six, as I would call it. The quick steal and layup was sort of a thing that he would hit you with in some flurries by just anticipating the play. I think he will play well enough on that end to not be a total liability. And he was. One thing that people don't really talk about a ton, but he shot 94% from the free throw line. He set the school and the SEC record. I think he ended the season on a crazy stretch where he hit like 70 out of 72 free throws. Usually a guy that's going to shoot free throws that well, even if his percentage, he wasn't like just a total dead-eye shooter all the time for free. But I do think when guys are that good at shooting free throws, they can obviously shoot it as their game grows. Their jump shot gets better and better too. And he's a guy that if in the workout setting, that's something people always told me around the Kentucky program, you know, when he came, it wasn't the idea he was going to be a one and done. But once he started having a pretty good year, people were saying, look, if he tests the waters and then goes and works out for people, he's going to just kill it in that workout setting. And I think that's what's happened. Every time I hear about one of his workouts, it's Tyler Hero, you know, burned up the nets. And he's going to do that. And I think as his career goes on, he physically matures and works on some of that stuff, he's going to be a much better percentage-wise three-point shooter than he was in 1 year at Kentucky. And then the last thing I would say with him is he's got the attitude of the guy you want. If you're drafting for what you hope Tyler Hero will be, he has supreme self-confidence, and he's got a little dog in him. I think people will like that quite a bit.
Yeah. I think, from what I read, he made some real big shots too. He wasn't afraid of the moment, for Kentucky at times throughout the year.
He won him the game in the Sweet 16. I mean, the shot of his career and the biggest moment of his college career, pulled up and nailed a big three-pointer to put him ahead in the final seconds against Houston in the Sweet 16, and then he hit the clinching free throws just after that. So he was not afraid of the moment at all at any point last year.
Well, Kyle Tucker, speaking of white guys who don't just shoot, we really appreciate you coming on to the show here at Locked on Pistons. Kyle Tucker _ATH for the Twitter handle, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. I'm a white guy who does more than just shoot poorly.
All right, I updated my top 15 big board and added 20 more spots, so it's now a 35-player big board. Maybe tomorrow before the draft, I'll extend it to 45 so that we can kind of keep tabs on it throughout the entire draft. And really, it's pretty simple. It's made from a Detroit Pistons perspective, so it's who they should be targeting with the draft, and you can kind of cross names off as you go along and see how you feel about it. So obviously, you know, we're looking at 1 through 7 are guys that I really don't expect the Pistons to have any chance at, certainly at 15. But Zion, Ja Morant, RJ Barrett, Darius Garland at 4, and Jarrett Culver at 5. I got Sekou Doumbouya up at 6, a little bit higher than a lot of people. Cam Reddish at 7. Brandon Clark, I moved him all the way up to 8, ahead of DeAndre Hunter at 9. Feel really strongly about Sekou Doumbouya and Brandon Clark. If the Pistons could find a way to package some picks and get their hands on one of those guys, that would be great. Like I said, DeAndre Hunter at 9, Coby White at 10, Nikhil Alexander Walker, I moved all the way up to 11. Just kind of going in on this guy as a possible Piston going forward. Short of that, Tyler Hero at 12. And then I moved up PJ Washington to 13, and a lot of that is because of the trade the Pistons made acquiring number 30. You don't have to get a wing at 30, so I'm more open to settling for maybe some of these other guys as well. Keldon Johnson I have at 14, another wing. A bigger wing in Rui Hachimura, I got him at 15. Nasir Little at 16. Now we're talking about guys that I would be disappointed if the Pistons ended up drafting them. Nasir Little at 16. Goga Batadze at 17. Nick Claxton from Georgia at 18. Bol Bol at 19. I got him right there. A guy I have a lot lower than everyone else is Jackson Hayes of Texas. I got him all the way down to 20. You know, no way. He's probably not even available to Pistons at 15, but I wouldn't even want to pick him anyway. Now we get into the 20s. Pretty interesting here after Jackson Hayes. Matisse Thybulle of Washington. I got him 21. Love the defense. Cameron Johnson of North Carolina. Do agree with a lot of you guys that he can come in and step in and knock down shots right away, which would be something the Pistons could use. I got Carson Edwards at 23, bucket getter of a point guard. Maybe not what Dwayne Casey is quite looking for, but I just love the guy, and I think he competes hard. Romeo Langford all the way down to 24. You know, a lot of folks think he's pegged to 15. Would be a pick I don't like for the Pistons at 15. Fiondu Cabangeli of Florida State. We're going to get used to saying that name at some point. I got him all the way up at 25 for the Pistons. A real consideration at 30. Dylan Windler of Belmont, got him up at 26. Nice shooter there as well. Darius Bazley, the high schooler that's getting a lot of linkage to the Pistons, got him at number 27, so a good pick at 30. KZ Akpala of Stanford is 28. 29 is Bruno Fernando, the center for Maryland. At 30, I got a bit of a surprise here. and that's a name that hasn't really been linked to the Pistons, but a name that I've liked throughout the entire season. So it's the guy I have at 30. So really, if you assume that the top 29 picks go the way that I've got them going in this big board, which is not what I'm predicting because that's a different thing from a mock draft, but the 30th ranked player I have on the list is Admiral Schofield of Tennessee. Just love that guy's body. And love his output in college, and think he could be a dude in the NBA as well. And almost on the list at 31, just off, was Isaiah Roby of Nebraska. 32, give me Luka Samanich, one of the players coming over from Europe. 33, I got Iowa State's Talon Horton Tucker. 34, the high schooler Jalen LeKay. And all the way down at number 35 is a player I hope the Pistons don't draft at 15. Been linked to him many times, and that's Kevin Porter Jr. That's how low I am on Kevin Porter Jr. I know that you guys, some of you guys like him and are not going to be happy to hear that. But some guys that I left off of my top 35 list that you'll see on a lot of other lists at this point. Ty Jerome of Virginia, I don't like his fit for the Pistons. Same for Grant Williams of Tennessee. I know some teams, someone will probably like his intangibles and jump on him late in the first round. I hope it's not the Pistons. And then Lewis King of Oregon is another guy who too many red flags throughout his time with the Oregon Ducks, just 1 year there. So that'll do it. That's my top 35 plus some guys that weren't on the top 35. So print that out. I'll tweet that out. You can kind of cross off the names on the list throughout the draft. I'll have draft grades on debtnews.com. I'll also have a podcast up for you guys on Friday morning with first reactions to the draft picks that the Pistons make and the moves that they make on draft day. And then we'll dive deeper into it to the beginning of next week as well. But a big trade, a big day, and happy draft day to all you basketball Knicks out there. There's so many of us out there, and we enjoy nights like tonight. So enjoy the pageantry, and hopefully the Pistons pick the guy you want them to at 15, 30, and 45. This is your host, Matt Shook, saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.